Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Great that you could be here too, The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. A very special guest today, Sally Hogshead. We've had Sally on the show before. What was the first?
Radical Careering.
Radical Careering, yeah. 100 Truths to Jumpstart Your Job, Your Career, and Your Life. She launched that one, that was a few years ago. Mm-hmm. She spent the next year touring the country as a motivational speaker for CareerBuilder.com. You've heard of them. Got a brand new book to talk about today. It's Fascinate, Your 7 Triggers of Persuasion and Captivation with Sally Hogshead here. A very special friend of the Advertising Show. And a little bit later on in the show, we've got Gene Bliss, too, as well. Also a very special part, Umpoc Bank, a customized service. And they really do that at the bank. It'll be interesting to have you hear that as well. Also, this is an interesting note. Sally had the opportunity to be a part of the Tiger Woods press conference that he had. We called it his coming out party a few weeks ago. Yeah. And she's going to talk to us about that as well. And it'll be interesting to get her take. So a lot of great reasons to listen to the Advertising Show.
And we got to mention week two of our special London-based correspondent, Jeremy Kent.
Jeremy is a guy who has an unusual accent. We believe it's London-based. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
He's our London-based correspondent. And what he is doing is giving us the Euro feel for advertising, what's going on over there. And, of course, makes a heck of a lot of sense, doesn't it? This is indeed a global-based show. So it's good to have Jeremy as a part of that as well.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeremy. Good content.
Yeah.
The Snickers commercial was kind of a good one. As a matter of fact, wasn't that the top one for the with Betty White and Abe Vigoda for the Super Bowl? Basically, what they're doing is they're taking to the road for the next installment of the campaign. This is Stuart Elliott, New York Times. And the original was for the first in a new campaign that carries the theme, You're Not You When You're Hungry. And we don't need to describe it. You've seen it a million times. Right. New commercial takes place inside a car on a road trip. One young male friend suggests to another that every time you get hungry, you turn into a diva. That thought is made manifest by the appearance of his friend Aretha Franklin, the singer. Miss Franklin eats a Snickers bar, turns back into Jeffrey. Jeffrey, at which point the passenger in the front seat of the car, who previously glimpsed as a young man, has turned now into Liza Minnelli. So I like the fact that they're playing with this stuff, and good for Snickers.
Yeah.
It's BBDO New York that is responsible for that.
We've had people on from BBDO New York.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And you know, I'm going to tie this back into advertising. I travel a lot. I'm on a plane frequently. So are you, Ray. And every time we take our shoes off to go through airport security, you think in terms of who other people's feet you're standing on and all of that. And soon I'm expecting to have to remove my underwear as well, but not yet. But, you know, I often wonder, why wouldn't they, you know, every morning at 6 a.m. show all the passengers that they're unwrapping in plastic, a platform that you'll be walking on, just like they do the pillows and the blankets on the plane.
Right, right.
And it would be sponsored by, you know, Santa Wipes or some
Lysol.
Sponsor. Yeah, Lysol,
something.
Whoever. I'm sure they'd gladly step up to the line and it would take a little extra effort. But, you know, right now you're standing there thinking, I wonder what toe fungus I'm going to get as a result.
Yeah, I totally agree. What a pleasurable experience.
Yeah.
I have to say that I want to thank the unfortunate gentleman who took his private plane and ran it into the IRS building a few weeks ago. What you've done is given general aviation a big black eye.
Right.
And trust me, folks, as a pilot, he ain't one of us, yeah. And should have never had the ability to fly that airplane.
And
so,
just as an aside, I don't wear underwear when I travel anymore, just in case you go through one of those X-ray deals. You know?
That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Be sure and tell your gate attendant that as well. And the alternative would be to ask her, are you wearing underwear?
did you leave your bags with anyone? And are you wearing underwear?
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Go on through.
Brought to you by Lysol.
Yeah.
On the advertising show, boy, this is a great way to set Jeremy up, isn't it? Our London-based correspondent, Jeremy Kent. You better clean this up, Jeremy.
Hello. Welcome to London and the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. This week, a new campaign for Radisson Edwardian Hotels puts their guests first. The UK government gives a green light to product placement, and why a disinfectant commercial cleaned up in 2009. Many hotels tell us that they put their guests first, but very few manage to convey that message effectively in their advertising. So when Radisson Edwardian launched their new campaign, it caught my eye. Called We're Very You, the campaign aims to celebrate the individuality of the guests. The highly personalised service message comes through clearly, and there is a simplicity to the strategic planning and the creative execution that I like. Rather than use photographs of landmark buildings and impersonal hotel interiors, the campaign centres on portraits of 10 regular guests and how the brand has spent time getting to know them, and by inference, all their guests. The portraits were created by new artists, and as well as featuring in the campaign, they will be displayed in an online gallery. They are well worth a look, and it's good to see new talent coming through. After much debate, the UK government has given the green light to product placement in television programmes. When the legislation comes into force, it will bring the UK into line with the majority of the European Union. At present, every other EU state, with the exception of Denmark, has either allowed product placement already, or has expressed a firm intention to do so. In an astute political move that silenced media and activist criticism, the government embraced the zeitgeist and put a few restrictions on what products can be placed and where. The placement of alcohol, foods and drinks high in fat, salt or sugar, gambling and smoking accessories will not be allowed. Tobacco advertising itself was banned some time ago. In addition, placement will not be allowed in current affairs, consumer, religious or children's programming. Broadly speaking, the television industry welcomed the move. The last few years have been tough. Media fragmentation has diverted advertising spend away from TV, and tough economic times have reduced media budgets even further. But we should be careful what we wish for. With more people skipping through ads on TiVo and watching their favourite programmes on their PC, advertisers may switch their dollars from TV commercials and into product placement. Staying with TV advertising, 2009 was a year that saw swine flu dominate the headlines, and Dettol's antibacterial spray hit the nail on the head with the most effective TV ad of 2009. TNS Research used Mercury, an early warning tool, to determine whether consumers engaged with the ads and how they felt emotionally after they'd viewed them. The survey of 250 commercials saw the Euro RSC G-spot for Dettol come out on top. Looking down the list, only one agency had two commercials in the top 10, and that was JWT, with its Kellogg's Corn Flakes and Kenco Eco Refill spots polling in the top 5. This is Jeremy Kent at the European News Desk for The Advertising Show.
Thank you, Jeremy. What a great accent. We believe that is either Carbondale, Illinois, or Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I'm not sure where that comes from. But, Jeremy, it's great to have you here as part of the advertising show. I want to talk for a moment, Brad, if we could, about Sally and tell our friends who don't know Sally all about her. Brand new book, Fascinate, Your Seven Triggers of Persuasion and Captivation. Book outlines Sally's 3 years of research on universal triggers, power, lust, mystique, prestige, alarm, vice, and trust. Seth Godin even said something. This is a transformative work, a beautifully written book that will forever change the way you see the world. I loved it. Let me be really clear. You need to buy the book. Devour it, absorb it, and then buy copies for your colleagues. A lot of copies. That's sounds like a great endorsement to me. But Sally has done a lot of different things in the advertising world and is very well known for that as well. She grew up, basically growing up with a name Hogshead would give anyone an unconventional point of view, and we would suggest that that's quite possibly true. Today's show, she's been on that, appeared on CBS's early show, Reality TV Making It Big, featuring Sally as the advertising icon who has changed the face of North American advertising. In her second year of advertising, she won more awards than any other copywriter in the United States, was called the most successful junior copywriter of all time. And the Martin Agency, Fallon McElliott, by age 27, let's see, we've got Crispin Porter, mentioned names like Minnie Cooper, Nike. Mickey and all that kind of stuff, and you attach that to Sally as well. So I guess we have nothing more to say about Sally, so that's good. Why don't we take a break here? The Advertising Show is being powered by Shipple, shipple.com. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L, and a program called Tendency, which is an incredible marketing platform. Check it out at shipple.com. Back in just a minute.
We didn't create Rebus, the best advertising agency software application, overnight. It took us about 20 years of refinement, with the help of over 400 of our customers worldwide. From CRM estimating and timesheet entry to a full accounting package, Rebus Software is a fully integrated and user-friendly platform that will make your staff more efficient and your agency more profitable. And because Rebus is an energetic, multilingual, and multicultural company, we can respond quickly to your specific needs, from the U.S. to the U.K., Spain, Italy, and Australia. Rebus, refined and proven effective by advertising agencies around the world. Want to find out how Rebus can work for your agency? Schedule a live online demo right now. Go to rebus-software.com, rebus-software.com. The live online demo is free. The results go directly to your agency's bottom line. Rebus-software.com.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
Nobody can call George Whipple an old fuddy-duddy. This new sign is right up with the times. Maybe this will stop the ladies from squeezing Charmin bathroom tissue.
Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth here at The Advertising Show. A very special friend of the show. Sally's been with us before. The other book, we talked about that. Sally's been here in the Houston market where we record the show. Had a chance to meet her personally as well at the Houston Ad Federation as well. Now, she's got a new book, and it is called Fascinate, Your 7 Triggers to Persuasion and Captivation. Sally, it is always a pleasure to hook up with you here at the Advertising Show.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here today with you guys.
Well, we're happy to have you. Sally, you were on the show, as Ray mentioned, a few years ago to discuss your previous book, Radical Careering. Curious, other than writing a new book, what's been going on with you lately?
I moved from Los Angeles to Florida for a big quality of life decision. I decided that I wanted to be closer to my parents, and I wanted to be able to live with my kids in an environment that could be more stable for them, that they could grow up with a more solid community. So since we've last spoken, I moved to Florida and put down some good roots there. I've been working a lot with brands and speaking, and like the rest of us, trying to keep up with all the changes going on in advertising these days.
You know, quality of life issues, I think, are taking a more forward role in people's lives, and that's kind of a reflection of the crazy world we live in. You note in your book that you've researched specifically for this book, which I found interesting. You know, most books don't have custom research per se. Why did you take that approach?
That's a great question. Nobody's ever asked me that before. The reason why I wanted to do this study of 1,000 Americans around the country, which was conducted with a very prestigious research company named Kelton Research, we did that because the topic of fascination is often seen as being imprecise or squishy, or that it would be my personal observation. And I didn't want the book to come down to my opinion. I wanted it to be quantitative on some level. So Kelton Research did this massive study about attitudes around fascination and how much are people willing to pay for it, how much does it increase the value of a brand if it's fascinating, what are the triggers people respond to. And then we also did a secondary qualitative study with hundreds of people in person and on the phone that was conducted by Deputy Research to learn what are the situations in which people want to be fascinating, and when they're being fascinating, what does that feel like, and what are they doing? And it's out of that research that we were able to ground a lot of the main factors in the book so that it wasn't coming down to just simply describing it.
You know, your book is very well written, no surprise there, but it seems as if, I don't know how to say this, short of sounding like Oprah here, it seems like you had a bit of an aha moment in wanting to pursue this concept of fascination. And I'm wondering, did the idea come first and then you reach out to research to prove some of your concepts or dispel some of your ideas, or was the research first and then the content?
I did a lot of research myself in starting to develop the idea, because I knew I wanted to do a book that was around the concept of why are we fascinated by some things and not others. I just didn't know that the word fascination was where it would end up.
Hmm.
And the aha for me is that when I was looking throughout history and across cultures at why there are certain people and trends that earn attention and there are others that die out, that I found this word fascination in ancient Latin. It's one of the oldest words in written language, and the word for fascination in Latin is fascinare, and fascinare is a form of witchcraft. And what, as I began to research this notion of fascinare, I learned that across every written language in the ancient world, since the beginning of civilization, every culture has a word for fascination, which is an irresistible type of influence from one person to another. And as I began to look through history, all the way through Constantinople and the ancient Romans and the Greeks and the sheep herders and the scholars through the Renaissance, all the way up to Sigmund Freud, this notion of fascination shows up again and again and again in the literature. And I realized that I didn't have to invent any of this, that it was all there in history, this idea of irresistible influence using fascination. Was all spelled out right there for me, and it was only a matter of figuring out how to start to apply it in a modern context that I needed to do as an author.
Well, let's get into some of the outstanding findings your research shares in your book. You say women will spend more to fascinate than they spend on. They will spend more to be fascinating, I should say, than they will spend on food and clothes, which I found a bit astonishing. Talk a little bit about this idea, Sally.
Isn't that incredible?
Yes.
Women will spend more to be fascinating than they spend on food and clothes combined. Why do women want to be so fascinating? And when we probed further on this, we learned fascinating people carry more influence. That fascinating people aren't just, it's not just about being attention-getting, it's about being persuasive and having deeper connections and being able to communicate in a way that's heard and remembered and acted upon. And so the fascinating person isn't just the one that gets the date. It's the person who gets the promotion. It's the person who has more influential messages with their children. It's the person who stands in front of the boardroom and is able to sell through a business proposal.
Hmm.
Women want to be fascinating in a variety of different ways in all aspects of their life. Men want to be fascinating about $50 a month less. They're willing to pay about $50 a month less than women are, but 5% of them will pay $1,000 a month to be the most fascinating person in the room. So this is something that's really important to people. They just don't know exactly how to do it.
You know, you say in your book, you don't control fascination. Fascination controls you. My immediate reaction was, should we fear anything that has the potential of controlling us?
Absolutely. Think of drug addiction, or in some cases, think of anytime you take fascination to an extreme, it starts to get into obsession or even compulsion, like obsessive compulsive disorder. When you're in the grips of fascination, I used the word irresistible. Being in the grips of fascination is something that's intoxicating, that you cannot resist it. So if you're in a theater and somebody yells fire, you can't decide whether or not you're going to pay attention to trying to get out of the theater. But we've also experienced this ourselves every day. When you crave a cupcake from Magnolia Bakery in New York, or you see a car on the street that you start to lust for, or you feel alarmed by a deadline that your boss gives you at work, you're not choosing to pay attention to those things the way you would choose to pay attention to a lesson plan or a PowerPoint. You're in the grip of this force of attraction.
You know, I want to mention that when Ray and I were at a bar the other night, he looked into my eyes, he said, "You fascinate me," and we ordered one final round.
Yeah, right. I was going to turn that around. You've got to move, take your hand off my leg, please. On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth. We're just kidding. Fascinate, your 7 triggers of persuasion and captivation. More with Sally Hogshead here in just a minute on the Advertising Show.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA.
To say that this is a fascinating interview would be an understatement here. Fascinate. Your seven triggers of persuasion and captivation. And our very special guest is Sally Hogshead. And for just a moment, a brief moment, I want to get off the book. Because we'll promote the heck out of it, as you well know. But Sally, a couple of weeks ago, had the opportunity to be at the Tiger Woods press conference, as his coming out party, so to speak. I guess that's what it is. Sally, tell us about that. Tell us your reflection, the room's reflection. What happened there?
To me, the most incredible thing was the way in which he made a certain type of eye contact with his wife and his mother, his family. That he felt as though he dropped his guard in a way that he never has before. And the people in the media room where I was sitting were slack-jawed, amazed at how human he came across for the very first time ever, that instead of being impervious, that suddenly it was this flesh-and-blood person standing in front of us. And people, most of the media thought it was an absolutely brilliant statement, and that it would do a lot to change public perception. I'm a little skeptical myself, but it was a very well-crafted piece of writing.
As anything the Tiger does, it's always well-crafted, except for that kind of screw-up in the middle there.
Yeah, okay. I think that's the problem. A lot of people, because he was so unbecoming and unengaging with the media initially, people are a bit suspect. Moving on, back to your book, Sally, and good to have a report, our reporter on the spot at the press conference a few weeks ago. You say in your book, while bells and whistles and gimmicks might work, maybe, they rarely lead to lasting emotional connections. I'm curious, we just finished seeing all of these expensive Super Bowl spots, so were there any emotional connections being communicated this year, or were they more about gimmicks?
The Super Bowl is about gimmicks. It's really not so much about emotional connections, because you're dealing with the single most expensive marketing real estate in the world, and it needs to be able to break through to a bunch of drunk people who are chomping on chips and drinking beer. I think, unfortunately, most spots this year failed miserably. They were neither emotionally connected nor bells and whistles. They were just really boring marketing messages created by frightened vice presidents of marketing.
Mm-hmm. Would you say the Anheuser-Busch commercials, when they try to do the dog and the horses, that they come a little closer to that emotional connection?
They come closer to emotion, but they what really makes those work is the fact that it brings up years and years of connotations for us. Mm-hmm. In the book, I talk about the trust trigger, which is the trigger that's about consistency and reliability and having a sense of stability, of being able to predict exactly what's going to happen. And if you remember, originally the Budweiser Clydesdales were not going to be on the Super Bowl, and some people say it was a publicity stunt because there was such a public outcry. How can you have a Super Bowl without the Clydesdales? They've been on the Super Bowl since, I don't know, I think it was like 91. And so they did end up putting a Clydesdale spot on there, and that's what makes that genre of commercial work. It's like it reaffirms this whole rosy glow of good feelings that we have about Budweiser.
Yeah. So Bob, probably the best one was the Spontaneity with the Letterman and Leno on there, huh?
Oh, yeah, what was that? That was incredible. what a genius maneuver that nobody saw that coming. I was doing commenting that night for the New York Post, and even the New York Post reporter, who had sent me a complete catalog of commercials in advance the day before FedEx of the spots that were going to be airing, he had no idea that was going to be on there.
And you know, the relationship got healed during all of that between Jay and David, so what a wonderful thing. We just have a minute left in this segment. I want to get your take on your so-called F scores, a concept that you developed and you mentioned in your book, available, by the way, at sallyhogshead.com. Tell us a little bit about F score. What's it all about?
Fascination applies to brands and companies' ideas, but perhaps most interestingly is the way it applies to ourselves and the way in which we elicit reactions from other people, the way that we try to persuade other people. So I developed this F score test with my team to help people understand which triggers they're using when they're trying to be their most influential and which ones they're not using but maybe they should be using. So it's a 28-question test, and at the end of it, it reveals which trigger you're using primarily, what the companion backup secondary trigger is to that, and also what your dormant trigger is and how your scores compare to other people's.
On the advertising shows, Ray Schillen's Brad Forsyth. Did not include a urine test, I understand.
No, that wasn't
good,
part
good,
of it.
Very good. No. It's Sally Hogshead. Fascinate your seven triggers of persuasion and captivation. Well, of course there's more. Why not? We'll do some more in just a minute here. Stay right here.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
It's a real thing in the back of your mind. What you're hoping to find.
You know, we absolutely love having Sally Hogshead on the show. We should get her as a regular, I think. Sally has been with the show before, her first book, and now we've got Fascinate Your Seven Triggers to Persuasion and Captivation. Out of Central Florida this weekend here, it's Sally Hogshead. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, great setup, Ray, for our next question. In your book, Sally, you lay out seven activators that trigger fascination. We're not going to talk about all of them because, after all, if we did, you wouldn't need to buy the book. But you lay them out: lust, mystique, alarm, prestige, power, vice, and trust. Let's talk a little bit about lust. Tell us why we're so fascinated by the anticipation of, I guess, what, pleasure?
It's the anticipation of an experience, a positive, pleasurable experience. If you've ever looked at something in a store window and you felt attracted to it in a way of, ooh, I want that, or if you think of your favorite dish in a restaurant, you think, oh, I'm craving that. It's a certain type of magnetism that draws you towards something because you're craving the experience of it. And sometimes lust can be focused on something that's overtly sensual, like lighting or a texture or a taste or even music. But lust also comes into play when a product uses great design. If you think of the iPod uses a certain style of aesthetics and design and navigation that makes you want to touch the device. It makes you want to turn it on and off and watch it. And it totally shattered what the category had, because nobody had ever infused lust into an MP3 player before. And so lust is a trigger that companies can use when they have a product that feels cold and unapproachable. And by infusing it with some sort of sensory input, they can make it become craveable.
You know, although I was intrigued, and Ray and I were talking about this before you came on the show today, we're both extremely impressed with your book and intrigued with all of your seven activators. One in particular that both of us found interesting was the concept of alarm, why we take action at the threat of a negative consequence. I see that a lot. I think most people see that a lot in our everyday lives, but I never thought of it in terms of a activator. Talk a little bit about that, Sally.
Alarm works almost 180 degrees opposite of lust. Lust attracts us to something. Alarm, on the other hand, makes us respond urgently. It's almost a fear reaction. If your boss walks into your office on a Friday and says, I need that report on Monday, you know that rising immediate sense of adrenaline, ding, 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 uh-oh, I have to react here, and you immediately lock into the threat of negative consequences. When a pharmaceutical ad talks about a potential life-threatening condition like a heart attack, or when Weight Watchers says bikini season is right around the corner, it makes you focus on a very specific response, because you know that if you don't, something bad is going to happen. Mm-hmm. We also do this with our own kids when we say, if you don't eat your vegetables, then you're not going to get dessert. So if you don't do X, then you're not going to get Y. If you don't pay your taxes, then you're not going to stay out of prison. And QVC says, we only have 10 left. Call now, or you won't be able to get one of these hang-o-matics. That's how alarm inspires us to instantly spring into action.
Yeah, you know, we just have a minute left. I can't let you leave without getting your reaction to this quick question. If a company listening in, a marketing director, a brand manager, whatever, is trying to decide what trigger is most valuable and useful to their particular brand or company, how do they determine their key triggers?
They should, first of all, they should read my book.
Right, of course.
They should take a look at what triggers they're currently using and decide if that trigger is helping them to meet their goals, because each trigger has a very specific, different response. Trust is the most valuable trigger of all, and it's the hardest to earn and the easiest to lose, but the most important for long-term relationships.
Here's the trigger for your business. Your competition's going to buy the book first, so go get it. Fascinate, your 7 triggers to persuasion and captivation. Sally, it is so wonderful to have you here. Thanks for being a part of the show today.
You guys are so great.
And by the way, go to sallyhogshead.com. That'd be a good place to start as well. We'll be back with more here on The Advertising Show with Ray and Brad. Stay with us.
Smart marketers are discovering a new and better way to get creative solutions. One company got solutions for a corporate identity program in less than 36 hours. The second got solutions for a public relations campaign that won 2 international creative awards. The third got solutions for a direct marketing campaign that got a 30% response rate. These marketers are finding creative solutions in a better way, the open ad way. You go to openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 creators. Within days, you get 20 or more creative solutions, and you pay only for the solutions you use. It's a radical new idea. You owe it to yourself to discover what it can mean to have creative solutions on demand. Find out now by going to openad.net, openad.net. Creative solutions on demand.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Button up your overcoat when the wind is free. Take good care of your cold. Take care of your cold. You belong to me.
Sally Hogshead, a very special friend of The Advertising Show and the author of a new book called Fascinate, Your 7 Triggers to Persuasion and Captivation. Go out and get the book, just because it's Sally, all right? Next week, we've got Rose Cameron with us. Rose is the Chief Strategy Officer at Euro RSCG Chicago, and we get a chance to talk to Rose next week on The Advertising Show. Gene Bliss coming up here in just a moment or so as well for Umpoc Bank, Customized Service. It's it's something that it's a really forward-thinking kind of a bank, so it's a good thing here. Here's one of my favorite things, HGTV. I love that channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they seem to be getting their act back together. They're putting programs that I really like, and I appreciate that, HGTV. I know you're doing that for me. It's basically they're doing a licensing business. They've got a deal with a mattress marketer placing its brand on a new line. The network's arrangement with Serta includes an HGTV green home collection of eco-friendly bedding, which is partly derived from soy-infused foams. Now, if you've got one of those Tempur-Pedic ones, that's a very interesting concept, but this is a little bit different. The advanced innerspring system for the mattress made from soy base, as well as 95% recycled steel coils.
Hmm.
That could be interesting. And organic cotton and linen fabrics, hence the name HDTV Green Home Collection, eco-friendly. I like that. I like the fact that they're doing something like that. So congratulations, HGTV. I think I want one of those right now.
Yeah. You know, I don't know about you, Ray, but just, I guess, what, a week and a half ago, I heard the popping of corks coming all the way out of New York City because Sirius XM Radio shares topped the $1 mark.
Wow.
Vaulting the $1 threshold for the first time in 17 months amid improved sentiment about the company's future. The comeback is attributed, Ray, in part to an improved outlook for auto sales, the major source, of course, for new subscribers to Sirius XM Radio.
Big time, yeah.
We want them to survive. They merged with Sirius and XM, merged,
yeah.
And we want them to survive. It's a new medium, and they've got a place in this media mix. And so, good for them.
I'm
good
glad
luck.
For them too.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a call from here at the studios from Pandora.
Yeah.
Of all people.
Wow.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah,
you know, Pandora's into advertising now and such.
If you don't know Pandora, go online, check it out, pandora.com.
My brother-in-law told me about that, and I was really appreciative of that.
Pretty cool.
It's just so amazing.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it would be a good primer for a lot of radio program directors these days.
Yeah, if you're not sure what kind of music you like, go to Pandora. They'll help you on that. If you know some music you like, they'll help you with the rest of it.
If you don't have any music test budgets, go to Pandora.
Yeah.
They'll figure it out for you, okay?
Yeah.
Have a nice day. Gene Bliss is with us here at the Advertising Show with Ray and Brad. Let's listen.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
Umpqua Bank is committed to delivering an experience customized for each customer. Their tellers can take your deposit and start a mortgage application, and their loan officers are pleased to also help you with your safety deposit box. Umpqua also believes in customizing experiences by community. The managers in each community customize their offerings based on their customers and their interests. From yoga classes in one store location, they don't use the word branch, to movie nights or a knitting club in another. Each has its own fund to enable it to customize the experience based on the lives of the customers in its community. As Umpqua changed its approach from a traditional banking-style service to a customized experience for each customer, employees had to learn to juggle many duties. It meant more work initially, but now they can't imagine being limited to the individual tasks their jobs were defined as before. As a result, the company has retained its employees. Umpqua's voluntary employee turnover rate is just 20%, compared to the banking industry rate of about 40%. Do your customers look forward to seeing you? Do your employees feel challenged and part of something great?
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to customerbliss.com.
Thanks, Gene Bliss, on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
You know, Ray, I don't know about you. We've made fun of Martha Stewart over the years.
Have we?
From her.
Yeah, I guess we have. Yeah.
We were around before she went to prison, while she was in prison, after she went to prison.
Martha, we went to visit her in prison, too.
Well, I didn't want to bring that up, but you're right. Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia is planning a replatforming for MarthaStewart.com. Changes, Ray, according to the site, will involve more tagging, better search optimization, and also video. The company's also launching its very first, think about this, iPhone app, offering recipes for, what's the price point? Sure, you guessed it, 99 cents. So free recipes from the fine folks at Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia, repurposing content, obviously. They're not stupid. From their iPhone app, go online, search, find it, download it if you have an iPhone or iPod Touch or an iPod of any sort. I guess you kind of, unless it's audio only, I don't know if it's maybe written. Check iTunes. They'll let you know.
It should be video, too, as well.
I can smell the bacon in the background right now.
What kind of bacon would that be? Would that be a hickory smoked?
Maple.
Maple. Very good.
Smoked, yeah.
You know, Martha was on Letterman a while back. It was kind of creepy. David was all over her.
In a verbal way, I hope.
No.
Physically.
In just a physical way.
Well, was she applying for internship?
Probably so. I don't know. That's past as far as he's concerned, though.
Yeah, true.
But no, it was really strange to see what Dave was doing. It's like, Dave, that's creepy, man. Don't do that. Stop that.
He can't really. He always did that, but he can't do that now without people looking at him and thinking, oh, what are you doing there, Dave?
Times have changed, or maybe he can do it now.
It's kind of like Tiger Woods, you know, going around kissing women up and down the thoroughfare, the greenway. What is it?
The fairway.
You're the golfer. Fairway. He can't do that anymore.
Whereas he's just kissing the women? That's not so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's fine. And he went back on, and he had his thing a couple of weeks ago. Yeah.
What do you think of
that? Please forgive me.
Did he do a good job?
Well, I think he did a good job, and I think he's true, and I hope the marriage can be saved. And I think he could have done a lot more a lot sooner.
Yeah, no doubt.
But I'd like to see him come back. Golf dearly needs him.
Well, my theory is that whoever handled the Toyota fiasco public relations effort, they also handled Tiger Woods' problem, because both of those were very poorly handled.
Yeah, exactly. That's an understatement. Look for us next week with Rose Cameron, Chief Strategy Officer, Euro RS CG Chicago. And tell a friend about the Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. With Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, the Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.